Hello, it's Carol here. Now, today is the anniversary of Richard's funeral, and I started these videos talking about my journey through grief on the 6th of November, which was the day he died. So I thought it probably a good idea for me to stop doing regular videos now on the anniversary of his funeral. But some of you knew Richard very well, who were kindly watching and listening, and some knew him not at all, and some knew him a little. And I thought on the day, I'd love us just to listen to the sermon that was given in St Martin in the Fields in Trafalgar Square in London by the Reverend Dr Sam Wells, who's the vicar of the church. And this is what he had to say.
There used to be a profession called journalism. Notice two words in that sentence. Have you ever noticed that journalism is an ism, like socialism, Epicureanism, or Anglicanism? In other words, it's something that requires commitment and conviction and involves loyalty and solidarity. Law, accountancy, politics, those aren't isms, but journalism is. Likewise, the word profession. It refers to a guild of members who have training, apprenticeship, standards, integrity, and a desire to serve the public at cost to their own comfort or freedom. There used to be a profession called journalism. There used to be a man called Richard Lindley. The word profession and the discovery that journalism is an ism, a kind of faith, are ways of saying Richard Lindley was a person whom Aristotle would regard as a man of virtue. All the cardinal and theological virtues, justice, temperance, courage, prudence, faith, hope, and love fit Richard pretty well. But the one that stands out is courage. He talked about the fear of failure that spurred him on. Thomas Aquinas says an important thing about courage. He says, those who have no fear aren't courageous. Instead, courage means having fear but persisting anyway. That was Richard Lindley. And what is it that took so much courage? Meeting a man like Saddam Hussein, yes. Facing horror in Bangladesh, yes. Being arrested in Angola, yes. Facing Alzheimer's, yes. But one thing above all requires courage from a journalist and from all of us. What requires courage most of all is to tell the truth. What makes journalism an ism, a form of faith, what makes it a profession, a guild of honor, is this commitment above all, to tell the truth. Come what may, whoever's embarrassed or aggressive or alienated or wild with threats, you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. That is the Hippocratic Oath of journalism. That was the creed of Richard Lindley. The Christian faith is that there is truth, and that truth became flesh in Jesus. And the world is allergic to the truth, so Jesus was crucified, but the truth can't be suppressed. So Jesus rose from the dead, and the Spirit came to empower Jesus' followers to spread truth into all the world. That Christianity, in the minds of many, ceased to be synonymous with truth is a great tragedy. That people beyond the church speak the truth anyway is part of the way God redeems the world despite the failures of the church. One person who spoke the truth in such a way was called Richard Lindley. 8 months ago, in this church, a bunch of asylum seekers played the disciples, and city slickers played the Sanhedrin, and a New York mogul played Pontius Pilate. As the congregation of St. Martin's enacted the Passion of Jesus as it does every Palm Sunday. At his trial, standing before Pontius Pilate, Jesus said, "For this I came into the world to testify to the truth." Pilate replied from exactly where I'm standing now, in a broad New York accent, "What is truth?" And everyone thought, "You don't know, do you? You've got so mixed up with lies, manipulation, and distortion that you actually have no idea." In the first century AD, those who spoke the truth to people who controlled resources and information were called prophets. Today, such people are called journalists. There used to be a profession called journalism. Today, we're led by people who don't know what truth is. Journalism is becoming an adjunct of marketing governed by algorithms. Real journalists who believe the truth sets you free are becoming so rare they're better described as prophets. We've gathered to honor Richard Lindley, journalist. Only now do we realize he was a prophet. And his faithful, dangerous, countercultural, courageous message was this: the truth will set you free. Free indeed.
The truth will set you free. Free indeed. What a very, very powerful sermon by Dr. Sam Wells. It made a great, great impression on me, and I'm very, very pleased that he gave it. Just 4 months before Richard died, he died last November last year, 4 months earlier in July 2019, he had his own podcast, Richard and Friends, where he said, "I've been a reporter for many years, but now I have dementia, though I can still talk to my friends and have conversations with them." And one of those conversations, I was pleased to say, was with me. And we talked together about his career, his life, our life together, and also his dementia.
I'm Richard Lindley. For over 30 years, I was a broadcaster for BBC Panorama and ITN News. Now I have dementia, but I still enjoy talking to my friends. And now I'm joined by my wife, Carol. Carol, how has the marriage changed your life?
Tremendously, sweetheart, tremendously. When I joined the BBC as a secretary, age 21, they said you will be established staff in 2 years. And I said I'll be married in 2 years. And 35 years later, a man, you, asked me to marry him. And I was married at 57, and it's been an absolutely fascinating journey since then. A very, very fascinating journey.
So how does it work? What happens in this particular disease? Is it physical, mental, dangerous, not dangerous? What's the best way to go to people with this disease and say, "Help me, my life is going to pieces"?
Well, I think from the experience since you've had Alzheimer's, sweetheart, which was 3 years ago, and to the present day, I think that we've really have gone on a very, very fascinating journey together, because it goes from your point of view from being a little forgetful to being more forgetful, and then even to sometimes saying that you have no direction, and having just got dressed, should you now get undressed? And often you say to me, even now, you say, "I know I love you, darling, but I can't remember your name." And you will remember the things you've done as a BBC and an ITN News reporter very well indeed, from your days in Biafra, in Vietnam. I can remember so many people you've interviewed: Saddam Hussein, you've interviewed Idi Amin, Mandela, and yet your children only ever remember that you've interviewed the Beatles. But I think that now it's at a stage where you are more and more forgetful and need a little bit of direction on even moving around the house and in remembering early things. And I think that the way you've dealt with it, never moaning, never putting blame on anyone but anything that's happened in the past, I've grown to love you more every day. And I think I've always asked that when I die, I wanted someone to put on my tombstone, "She took life in her stride." And you, my darling, I think you're taking life in your stride.
Thanks, Carol. Now, when did all this happen? Was there a particular date, a time?
Well, I think, as you know, I used to produce a programme called Any Questions for Radio 4 for many years. And I, in those days, very exciting it was. And I miss broadcasting. And I'm sure that you do too miss broadcasting. And that's one of the reasons why I think we are, and you are so enjoying having your regular podcast. And I think we thought that if you went back to broadcasting in this way, it would bring back some of the memories that you enjoyed so much, some of the music in some of the podcasts we do. And as you know, we're starting Music for Dementia in October, where we'll just have a couple of hours with people who suffer from dementia, listening to music and singers.
But isn't it going to be just simply too old, too expensive, too late to get on air? This doesn't sound to me like something full of get up and go, but rather old people doddering into middle age.
Well, I never thought of it that way, although I do sometimes think myself things I haven't done rather than things I'm going to do. But I think that, you know, you're the one that tells me, what are those wonderful, wonderful words that you always, always use for me that have had such an extraordinary effect? I think they were spoken by Julian of Norwich, or Dame Julia, and they're, "All shall be well, and all manner of thing shall be well." And when I hear you say that, particularly if I'm in your arms, it makes the world seem possible and that we can do anything. And I think that the podcast we do and whatever we do from now until the day we die can be what we make it. We can take the challenge and we can learn from everything. And I learn every day from you.
Good. It varies a lot, doesn't it?
I don't know if you remember, but when we first met, you always had classical music on and sound of all sorts of music in the house. And I think I used to talk so much, eventually you stopped having the music all the time. And that was my mistake. And then you read so much, and you still do read to me in bed every night. We've done everything from War and Peace, Midnight Children, to children's books. And I've thoroughly enjoyed it. And the one book that you read to me was one that you said when you were at Cambridge University, you read it all in one weekend because it made such a huge, huge effect on you. And when it wasn't quite so powerful for me, you really put your hands above your heads and you looked at me and you said, "Well, I may have to reconsider." And that was before you'd asked me to marry him. So I was quite concerned about it. But what was it about Middlemarch that particularly made you feel so much you wanted to get to the end and so made such an impact on you?
We mortals, fresh and women, devouring many a disappointment between breakfast and dinner time, keep back the tears and look a little pale about the line and lie in answer to inquiries which say, "Oh, nothing." Pride helps, and pride is not a bad thing when ill only urges us to hide our hearts, not to hurt others. That by designing what is perfectly good, even when we don't quite know what it is and cannot do, what we would be a part of, the divine power against evil, a widening by the skirts of light and making the struggle with darkness narrower.
Well, ITN World News, BBC Panorama, musicals, reading to me, all the great variety of life you've given me in marriage and even before marriage, Richard, I can only say that I'm delighted that it was our 20th anniversary year. We married 20 years ago in 1999, and I loved every minute of it. And even now we're going through a challenging time with the dementia and the loss of memory, but we're still enjoying each other's companies, and I still wake up every morning and delighted to be in your arms.
Thank you very much indeed. That's a wonderful thing to say and hear said to you. And what is it that we get when, again, what kind of disease is it?
Dementia, Alzheimer's. Dementia.
Thanks so much. If we don't know much about it, don't worry. There'll be plenty more, I'm sure, when we get into it. It's such an important issue.
We must make sure that people raise the awareness of it and do what they can with what they've got. That's what you've always said.
And that's it. That's what we need.
And what were those words that I wanted you to read?
All shall be well, and all manner of things shall be well.
That's wonderful. Thank you, Richard.
Thank you, Carol. Let's now continue our journey together.
Let us now continue our journey together. I'll have to continue the journey without you by my side here in this life, my darling, but I will do as I always promise myself and you. I will try to live within the glow of our love. Before I go, I just wanted to read you just a little weeny piece from a book I mentioned briefly last week. It's written by C.S. Lewis, A Grief Observed. He married late in life, and after four happy, happy years, intensely happy, with his wife, she died of cancer, and he was inconsolable. I found what he said and how he lived his life then on very, very comforting, and I want to read you just the very first page that he wrote. And he said, "No one ever told me that grief felt so like fear. I am not afraid, but the sensation is like being afraid. The same fluttering in the stomach, the same restlessness, the yawning, I keep on swallowing. At other times it feels like being mildly drunk or concussed. There is a sort of invisible blanket between the world and me. I find it hard to take in what anyone says, or perhaps hard to want to take it in. It is so uninteresting. Yet I want the others to be about me. I dread the moments when the house is empty. If only they would talk to one another, and not to me. There are moments, most unexpectedly, when something inside me tries to assure me that I don't really mind so much, not so very much. After all, love is not the whole of a man's life. I was happy before I ever met H. I've plenty of what are called resources. People get over these things. Come, I shan't do so badly. One is ashamed to listen to this voice, but it seems for a little to be making out a good case. Then comes a sudden jab of red-hot memory, and all this common sense vanishes like an ant in the mouth of a furnace. I feel like that myself. This journey and the times I've been speaking to you, I think I can cope. I can manage. I will, my darling. And then suddenly, I think I'll never see him again. I'll never see my man again. And I feel, how can I cope? How can I manage? That then hope returns, and I will try to do as I can and carry on as I want to, and as I hope others who have lost loved ones will carry on. Thank you for listening to me. Thank you for being with me. Makes a great deal of difference, and I'm saying only au revoir and hope I can come back and talk to you on another occasion.